the season of Advent is coming to a close for us as we prepare for Christmas. And of course, the season of Advent is meant to mirror the prophets of old. And within Scripture, each of the prophets, the Old Testament prophets, each in their own unique way, they're responding to a world that's gone wrong. And as they survey the landscape of the world around them, it's ugly. And they lament that things are not as they should be. And in that sense, I think they're no different from us. We look around the world today and think, why is it still so wrong? Why does it still feel so ugly at times? Just this morning, talking with a few people, and Christmas is hard because of relationships, things not quite right. And one of the things we realize within these books, the prophetic books of old, is there's a consistent theme, and it's this. We know God is about to act, but we must wait. From Isaiah to Malachi, that's the lament that we hear over and over. The world has gone wrong. God is about to act, but we must wait. But for how long? Advent is that lamenting reminder that to see God at work often requires waiting. And as we shift our focus to Christmas, it's the promise delivered. To remember and reflect on the story of Jesus' birth, the moment when God took on flesh, it's a celebratory reminder that God does indeed act and work in the world. It just requires waiting, waiting. And waiting is hard. Woke up this week and I came downstairs. My kids are always up earlier than I. And I came downstairs and my four-year-old Evie was sitting under the tree just holding her present. What are you doing? Just holding it. Just waiting. And then, 2 days ago, came down very groggy. Was up late the night before. And I came down in my boxers, and Evie said, I've got a song I want to sing for you. I said, sounds good early in the morning. And so she started in her song, and her song was this. I opened my Christmas present. I said, what? What did you do? What? I turned around and it's open. What have you done? But she's so cute, I couldn't get mad. She's like, why couldn't you wait? I didn't want to wait. Fair enough, I feel the same way. I don't like waiting. It's not just for kids that waiting's hard. We're children of this high-tech, high-speed, instantaneous age. We're not good at waiting either. Waiting's not our thing. And so here's the thing. If you do believe God is at work in the world, especially today, our patience for seeing that can wear pretty thin. The world is not as it should be. Evidence of that is everywhere. The world has gone wrong. Compassion is in short supply. Division is everywhere. Within ourselves, we experience tension and hurts and wounds and disappointments. Our own worlds are not right. And we think, how long do we have to wait? But the message of Advent is just wait. But that becomes wearisome. You get tired of waiting. But here's the thing. The waiting is essential. But why? It's not just that we wait for the sake of waiting. It's that the waiting has a specific purpose. It's essential for our own growth and development. Brian Zahn says this. It's in the waiting that our soul grows quiet and contemplative and cultivates a capacity for awareness by which we can discern what God is doing when God does act. It's in the waiting that we learn to see. It's in the waiting that we learn to see God is already acting and working, but to see that requires a new set of eyes. Because the thing is this, I think so often we're deceived and fooled into looking for God to act in big, loud ways. That miracle, some kind of direct intervention, some big sign and wonder that would allow us to know, you know what, at times God doesn't mind throwing power around, get things done. And I think so often we're tempted, we're seduced into thinking that God is mostly found in the big, in the loud. But what the Christmas story does for me is it reminds us that God is almost never found in the big and the loud. The ways of God are predominantly quiet and small. I love, there's this reminder of this, I love this story in 1 Kings. And in this story, the prophet Elijah, he's running for his life because he's spoken a prophetic word of power to the monarchy, the king, the queen of the day. And it's gotten him into trouble. They want to kill him for this. And so he's on the run for his life. And he spends 40 days in the wilderness because in the Bible, anything less than 40, it doesn't work. It's got to be 40. Got to be in the wilderness for 40 days. Spends 40 days in the wilderness running for his life, and he comes to a cave and he collapses in exhaustion there. He's exhausted, tired of being on the run, tired of trying to save his own life. He's waiting for God to act. And so Elijah collapses in this cave. He pleads his case with God. This is what Elijah says to God. I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant. They've torn down your altars. They've put your prophets to death with the sword. I'm the only one left. And now they're trying to kill me too. The Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And I love this story so much. Because we think to ourselves, where is God in the midst of a messed up world? It's not in the specters of wind or fire or earthquakes. It's not in the big noise of rallies or rants or marches or media stories. God isn't in the racket of the big, but in the whisper. Now, how does God act in the world? How might we see God at work in the world? In the gentle whispers. Not in the big noise. Not in the headlines. And I think this is my trouble, our trouble. We're far more impressed with the big. Waiting for God to act in the world in some sort of big way. But what we're taught by Advent is the waiting is to help us learn to see in a different way. Because God is always acting. And God is always at work in the world. The question is, can we see it? Can we hear it? I had a bizarre thing happen to me this week. I suppose that's a lot of weeks I have bizarre things happen to me, but I'm on my way to a meeting, and I'm sitting at a traffic light in my car. I'm in the right-hand side of the lane. It's snowy. It's slick out. And I'm not looking behind me. I'm just sitting there. And all of a sudden, I hear some sort of swishy, some chaos going on behind me. Then I hear a car hit a bumper and slide up right beside me. What is this? There was only grass next to me. There's no lane. And turn around and saw the snowy imprint of a car sliding and then gone up on to the side of the road and came to a stop behind me, narrowly missing rear-ending me. In that moment, I was like, my goodness, I didn't see that coming at all. And as I assessed the situation, I mean, had I been hit, I don't think I would have been killed by any means, but I certainly maybe would have had whiplash. And then I would have had to deal with the most annoying thing in the world, which is calling insurance companies, trying to find a car rental, perhaps, trying to find a way to fix my car. It was a nightmare avoided. Now, here's the thing. I thought about that situation. There are a few different ways to sort of process and look at that situation. How does one respond? Now, here's the first thing. I wouldn't have put it past myself to get very angry at that car, because that happens to me a lot in traffic. It wouldn't have surprised me if my response had been, you idiot, what are you doing? Learn to drive. I didn't, gratefully. Another way to respond would be, my goodness, God has miraculously intervened, and some angel of the Lord at the last minute stood behind my car and made sure the other car went off the side of the road. Another way to respond would have been like, whew, that was lucky, and then just kept driving. And here's the thing, I've been thinking about that incident because if one believes God is always acting and always at work in the world, then how does one see a very typical situation like that? I'm sure we've all had experiences like that. If God's always at work in the world, the question is, can we see it? Can we hear the whisper? And here's the thing that happened to me. I choose to believe God is at work in all situations. And hang with me for a second, because here's what so often cripples the progressive mind. If I say God was at work in that situation, we get all caught up in these metaphysical realities. Are you saying God intervened and pushed that other car off the road so it wouldn't hit you? That's not what I'm saying. But just because I don't believe that happened doesn't mean I don't believe God was not at work in that situation. Because there was a split second in that moment after it happened where I heard this whisper, not audible, had this sense. It was this. Life is fragile. And Brad, you're not in control as much as you think. You didn't see that coming at all. Life is fragile. And you don't need to be angry about that, Brad. Just be grateful. Because life is a gift and it cannot come undone in a split second. And there's going to be times where it will come undone. But for this moment, Brad, just be grateful. It was a fleeting second, but the question is that sense in that 30 seconds following the incident, what am I going to do with that? And I got to be honest, this time of year for me is one where I can get grumpy pretty early. I don't like crowds. I don't like a lot of what the season is about, but in that moment, for a split second, it was, okay, Brad, just be grateful. Because life is a gift. And yeah, you avoided that, but maybe gratitude could be your posture throughout the season, not just in this split 30 seconds. And the question is, can I hear that as God at work in my life? Can I see that split second moment as God's whispered reminder, be grateful. Don't be the grumpy guy. Just be grateful. God is always acting and at work in the world. The question is, can we hear it? Can we see it? And this brings me to the Christmas story. You see, on that first Christmas, God was at work through the incarnation. God was at work in some small backwater town through some insignificant teenage girl, delivering the hope of the world. And what's so curious to me about the Christmas story is only two groups of people that night noticed, the shepherds and the magi, which is a delightful mystery to me. I mean, why, of all people, were shepherds and magi the only ones who seemed to know or understand that something was happening that night? I mean, of all the people you can imagine heading, traveling off to see young Jesus, why them? There's something very telling about that to me, because it wasn't the Pharisees. And the Pharisees in the first century, they were part of a religious order, and they were obsessed with predicting that God was about to act, but they missed it. It wasn't the Zealots who noticed something was happening. The Zealots, of course, were constantly calling for overthrow the powers, get rid of those in charge, and they missed it. It wasn't even the scribes and priests whose whole job was to look at Scripture and go, what's going to happen? Let's figure this out. And they missed it. The religious, the scholars, the zealots, they all missed it. And it makes me wonder how often we miss it in life as well. How often we fail to see what God is really up to. How often maybe God is doing something special and working and we just don't notice. The only ones who noticed were foreign stargazers and peasant shepherds. Shepherds and magi. And it's a curiosity to me because I've wondered, well, is there a commonality between the two groups? And the only commonality I can find between them is that they were both people who stared at the night sky vigilantly. I mean, consider shepherds. I've taught on this before, done a whole Christmas sermon. I'll keep this brief. But the life of a shepherd was one of constant vigilance, always watching, always looking, always noticing, eyes always open. Because from a social psychology point of view, Richard Beck suggests that the shepherds actually would have had a lot in common with herding cultures. And historically, they've been more violent and retaliatory than farming cultures. Why? Well, it's really hard to steal from a farmer. because the harvest is ready only for a very, very thin slice of time during the year. And what are you going to do, run off with a whole field of wheat or whatever they're growing? It's very hard to steal from a farmer, but from a herder, a shepherd, it's very easy to steal from. In fact, Beck goes on to suggest, imagine that your paycheck or whatever money you have in the bank, that every night that money was put on your front lawn. Sleep well. Yeah, right. You'd be sitting out there with your shotgun. Hey, stay away from my money. That was their money. That was their currency. It was their sheep. That's how they made a living. And so every night, watching vigilantly, looking intently. So the life of the shepherd was that, always watching, always looking, always noticing. What about the Magi? Oh, they're such an interesting group of people shrouded in mystery. We have no idea who these people were. It's all very curious to me. And to start, all we know is Matthew tells us they came from the east, very broad range, came from the east. And popular to our nativity sets, we don't know if there was three, we just know there was a group, the Magi, which sounds a bit like magic, which it is. And I was interested to learn this week, the KJV, King James Version, they didn't like the idea of magic being associated with Magi, so they turned and interpreted that phrase as wise men. But it's not wise men, it's Magi. And as best we can tell, the Magi were a priestly caste within Zoroastrianism, a Persian religion founded in the 6th century BCE. And this group would have been experts in astrology. They would spend their nights watching the sky, looking for something, anything. And whatever it was, something in the night sky alerted them to God being at work. But again, the details are curious to me. The story describes it, of course, as a bright star that's like stopped over Jesus and his family. And there's fascinating to me because part of me is thinking, if there's actually a bright sky hovering over a specific family, well, that might attract the crowd. But it doesn't. It doesn't seem to register to anyone but them. It's something that only they can see. Herod and his cronies, they miss it. The Pharisees miss it. The zealots miss it. The scribes miss it. They all miss it. They fail to see or notice. But for this Magi group, whatever they saw something in the night sky, and they go in search of it. And so these two groups are fascinating to me. The only commonality I can find between the two groups is that they were vigilantly looking. And I think these stargazers and magi are great metaphors for us. I think gazing at the stars, keeping watch by night, it's a profound metaphor, I think, for the contemplative life. To most people, it would appear that these two groups of people were doing nothing significant anyway, and yet while seemingly doing very little, they were the ones who were able to discern what God was doing, that God was at work. They were the ones who discerned what God was doing in the seemingly ordinary event of a young woman giving birth in some remote corner of the empire, watching and looking. You know, my favorite summer memory from this past summer is up at Kristen's family cottage. We happened to be there this time when the moon was waning, and so the night sky was brilliant. And because the sun's always out till like 9, 10 o'clock in the summer, my kids are always asleep before they can see the night sky. And I love looking up at the stars. So one night at 12:30, I went out on the front rocks, I laid out a blanket, got some pillows, and then I went and I woke up all three of my kids, carried them down, laid them down, and said, just take a look, you're going to see a beautiful night sky. And laying there, their first reaction is, well, they're a little grumpy, I woke them up, but their first reaction was, I can't see anything. I said, it's because you have to wait, your eyes have to adjust. As they waited, they're like, wow, that's great. I'm like, just keep looking. You'll see some shooting stars. Of course, this became problematic because one kid saw a shooting star, the other didn't, started crying. I was like, oh, I didn't see that. Just just wait. Just wait. Keep waiting. Keep watching. You'll see it. You just have to wait. And this is why I find the shepherds and magi intriguing. They were only ones who seemed to know and understand what God was up to on that first Christmas. And again, the only commonality I can find is this. They were vigilantly looking for it. Waiting, waiting, waiting. I think this is the key. Don't believe that God works in the world. If you don't believe that, then you'll never see it. But if you trust that God does work and is acting in the world, if you trust that enough to actually start looking for it, then your eyes will become open. You'll see. It's no accident to me that on the night that Jesus was arrested and betrayed, right before he was arrested and betrayed, Jesus takes his closest followers into the Garden of Gethsemane, and he takes them into the garden, and before he goes off on his own, what are the two things he asks them to do? This is what he says, stay here and keep watch with me. Instructions at the end are what? Wait and watch. Because to those who wait and watch, they're given the gift of being able to see God at work. But of course, they're unable to do that, right? They fall asleep, and what happens? Because they weren't waiting, because they weren't watching, they failed to understand what God was doing in that situation. And so Jesus is arrested, taken off, carted away. And what do the disciples do? They run away, afraid. As it was in the end, so it is in the beginning of Jesus' life. The ones who can discern what God is up to are the ones who wait and watch. Because waiting for God to act in our world only seems like waiting for God to act. God is always acting in our world because God always is loving the world and always giving birth to something new. God is always at work. I like how Brian Zahn says this, waiting for God to act is actually waiting for your soul to become quiet enough and contemplative enough to discern what God is doing in the obscure and forgotten corners, far from the corridors of power or wherever you think the action is. Watching the skies diligently, it was only the shepherds and magi who understand God's at work. That first Christmas night in some cave or stable or whatever it was, some frightened teenage girl beside a confused father, birthing hope and life and light into the world. It was only them that saw it. I think there's a profound lesson, at least there is for me. If we want to see God at work in the world, if we want to participate in what God is doing in the world, it will mean learning to wait and watch, becoming contemplative stargazers, you could say. And some of you might say, well, hi. That sounds all well and good. What exactly does that look like? You know, I had, this past May, I had the opportunity to spend 2 days with David Fitch, a man I greatly appreciate. He's doing some phenomenal work, and he has some really interesting spiritual practices. And I don't know about you, but the New Year's approaching, so of course, I'm all in, what am I going to do in the new year? What's my resolution going to be? Maybe it'll last a week or two, who knows? But like, I want to have specific practices that I do, and some of the ones that David has are fascinating to me, and hearing his stories of them were interesting. His first is just what he calls his bar practice. He says this, I should have put this on the screen, sorry about that, but these are his words about his practice. I believe in the practice of sitting regularly, defined as at least once a week, at a local bar, being present to the people that are there, noticing them, their eyes, just sitting there peacefully with some sort of beverage, and praying for everybody in that bar. Do this for a couple hours a week, then go home. Wait, and be open to what happens. And it's interesting, he's been doing this for over a decade, once a week, in a bar. Orders a beer, and waits, and notices people, simply makes himself look peaceable, and waits, prays for people in the bar, and waits. And some of the stories he has told are fascinating, but he's always hesitant to tell specific stories about people he's interacted with, because he's like, most weeks, I go home, and nothing happened. But he's like, it's only in the practice of waiting that you can then, and being open and present, that you can become available to people's lives. And he's like, every week I do this. He says, every week I also do it Sunday mornings in McDonald's with a coffee, a wait. And eventually someone will strike up a conversation, somebody share a story. I got to be honest, when I read about this practice, I thought this would suit me very well. I like beer. And generally, I like sitting alone. So, but what would that mean to practice something like that? Because maybe it's not a bar for you. Maybe it's Tim Hortons. Or maybe it's walking around your neighborhood with the same sort of countenance. Or maybe it's just walking into Christmas dinner with family this year with that same countenance, knowing, you know what, for some of us, maybe this is going to be really hard. Maybe this is going to be a pain to get through this day. But if your countenance was, I'm just going to be open and present and praying for people, well, maybe you might be surprised to see the way God acts. Maybe you might hear a whisper, a nudge. What about with your kids? David was telling me he practiced this with his kids, and I tried this with Huxley, and it was bizarre. Because what he said he does with his kids when they were growing up and having a freak out is he would just remain calm and just pray, Holy Spirit, be here in this situation. And something good happened. Huxley was having a freak out. And I was sitting there, and normally I've got, you know, there's a specific sort of span you have before you start mirroring their energy. And calm, and then something, a gasket blows. Anyway, but it happened this one time. He was freaking out, and I just prayed, and then he stopped. And again, it's one of those things, right, where you start to go, you don't want to always be too mystical, I suppose, but there's two ways, like the car pulling up beside me, there's ways to look at the world. You can either say, awesome, that was great, and move on with your day, or you can go, maybe God was at work in just a whisper. I'm not sure, but I love the idea of this discipline here. Place yourself somewhere. Be present, wait, pray, be open to what happens. Wait and keep watch, wait and keep watch. And as we conclude this morning, this Advent season, this is our last formal gathering of the year. As we prepare for Christmas and a new year around the corner, my question is this, will you wait and keep watch? Because here's the thing, I want to close this morning by making a very bold and confident proclamation to you. And it's this. God is about to act. God is about to act and work in your life. This week, this year, God's going to act. The question is, will you be able to hear it? Because it won't be loud, and it's not going to make headlines. Chances are, both in the world and in your own personal life, God is going to act, but it's going to come as a whisper. And there's a good chance you might miss it. And so it will mean a number of things, maybe more proactively putting aside distractions, our phones, our televisions, paying attention to our own lives and days. If we're going to see God act, like he did at that first Christmas, it's going to mean watching vigilantly for it. And so we must train ourselves, learn to be quiet, to just sit with Jesus and wait. Then, and only then, we will begin to discern, what is God doing in my life? And so as we turn another calendar year, I want to say that God is going to act in your life this week, this coming year. And it won't be big. It's going to be small. A whisper. May you find the time this season to allow yourself to wait and keep watch, to discern what God is doing in your life and in the world.